All right, thanks, Brooke. So you guys, this is like the seventh or eighth week. So you know who I am, where I come from, what my home group is. I'm just gonna dive right in. We left off on page 47 last week. So far, in the chapter We Agnostics, where we have gotten to is we did talk about the first paragraph of We Agnostics that kind of just summarizes the first 44 pages and the doctor's opinion. And then we talked about that new sense of power that flows in a little bit, the second step promises. Then we got to the second step. We went over that. And now I'm just going to start from the bottom of page 47. Says, besides a seemingly inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped. Now I'm on page 48, by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. Many of us, including myself, have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. It's funny because my husband is home and present, kind of around right now, right? And I don't. He doesn't usually like to listen to me talk. Obviously, he gets that enough. So before the meeting, I was kind of making my notes and I was poking around, going, ah. The worst chapter to try and figure out how to do in 1 hour. And he goes, oh, are you on We Agnostics? And I said, yes. He's like, yeah, that makes sense. And his experience and my experience are so different when it comes to this chapter. And that's another reason that I got to tell you, I just am not comfortable going through word for word with people that I sponsor until they've had that spiritual awakening, right? Until they've acquired their ideal of a power greater than themselves. And that's why I don't really do the whole word for word thing, but we do go over the instructional highlights. And one of the things that and I know I stopped right in the middle of a paragraph, and I don't usually do that, but I want to dissect this a little bit because the casual reference to spiritual things is what made me bristle with antagonism, right? And I came in my first big book, and I still have it. It has all 233 times that use the word God is mentioned. It has it marked out with black Sharpie. Right. And my husband, like by the time he got here, 4 years after I got here, right, he didn't come in with any room to bristle with antagonism. He didn't he his experience was a little bit different than mine with this chapter and with this step. For example, this step, and I've said it before in this workshop, this step two, took me longer than all the other steps combined. Step two was the easiest step for him to take because of this next part. So now we read what my take was. I bristled with antagonism. I was not willing to even say the God word, right? And then here's my husband's experience. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. Though some of us resisted, we found it no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. No amount of yets, got me to the point of being willing to take this step. There was no amount of frothy emotional appeal that you could throw at me. There was no amount of, of telling me what could happen, of taking me into the jail and showing me, what I could end up like, or old timers saying, "Oh, well, you're lucky if you get off the elevator." That stuff didn't work for me. King alcohol was the only persuader that was going to work for an alcoholic of my type. I had to get into enough pain. I guess I wasn't in enough pain or to acquire that willingness when I first got to AA. My husband did not step foot into AA until he pretty much was dead. And so he came in with the willingness. I had fight in me. I had some fight left in me. It finally beat us into the state of reasonableness. So I had to be beaten into the state of reasonableness in AA. He got beat outside of AA and didn't end up in AA until he was beat into that state. Sometimes this was a tedious process. For me, it was a tedious process. I just kept on trying, right? I just kept on thinking that I was going to outthink King Alcohol, that I was going to beat it this time, that somehow, someday, I was going to try and, be able to control my drinking, control and enjoy my drinking at the same time. Like, that was my great obsession. And it says, "We hope that no one else will be prejudiced for as long as we were." And I can say for myself, for as long as I was very prejudiced. I didn't have a resentment against God. I just was too smart to believe in Santa Claus, God, and the Tooth Fairy. I was just too smart. I was too intelligent, right? And so those are the things that I think, I really like my highlight is alcohol was a great persuader, and it says it throughout the book. John Barleycorn is the only, right? Even in the traditions, it says there's no AA cops. We can't, I'm not going to dive into the traditions again, but even in the traditions, it says that there's no, AA cops. And we have two forms of drawing a blank on the word, that force us to do things. One is great love, right? And the other is great pain. And so there's John Barleycorn, and then there's gratitude and love. And those are the only two things that really that have ever worked with a drunk like me. So fast forward a little bit to let's turn to page 50. I really like on page 50 at the first couple of paragraphs. I'm not going to read them word for word, but they're kind of talking about how, like, everybody has their own path to the same end goal, right? Everybody finds their own higher power. Our personal stories, you will find a wide variation of in each way, each teller approaches and conceives of a power which is greater than himself. Each one of these is different, right? And it looks different for everyone. But then the next paragraph, which I will read, says, "On one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed." So there's one thing that everybody, no matter what their path was, agrees on. It says, "Every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than himself. This power has, in each case, accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible." Now, when we get to the 10th step promises, we'll hear of the miraculous, the miracle of it, the humanly impossible of how when we go through and we take these simple actions wholeheartedly without holding anything back, then all of a sudden, when we come out the other side, the problem will have been removed. It doesn't exist for us. And that is the ultimate end goal, right? I mean, ultimately, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum usefulness to God and those about us. But I can't be of maximum usefulness to God or anybody else until I get over this alcoholism, right? Until until I'm fixed. I mean, until I'm fixed. And these steps accomplish that, the miraculous, the humanly impossible. As a celebrated American statesman put it, look at the record, right? The proof is in the pudding. I'm just going to read a little bit more of the second step promises, which are at the bottom of page 50. It says, in the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, and it's going to talk about this new power throughout the book, peace, happiness, and a sense of direction flowed into them. This happiness, this happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple suggestions. Oh, you guys caught it? Yeah, these aren't suggestions. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. So, what are those few simple requirements, right? To open the door with just enough willingness. And if I'm not willing, I got to be willing to become willing, right? And that's what this whole chapter is about. I'm going to skip to page 52, which a lot of you guys know this paragraph is the bedevilments. It's the paragraph that starts, we have to ask ourselves. And a lot of people, you know, I've heard it also said, stated that this paragraph, the bedevilments, is it describes untreated alcoholism. I don't know if any of you guys have heard that. And I get it. I mean, it does describe an untreated spiritual malady for sure. But I believe that alcoholism does have to do with alcohol. When I have untreated alcoholism, I remember that. Like, I remember waking up promising I'm not going to drink again and still drinking. I remember not being able to go down the cheese aisle. That's when I had untreated alcoholism. So I like to be, again, I'm a big book literalist. So I like to think of these things as the untreated humanism, right? These are human problems that everybody has, not just alcoholics. Where do I get that? Well, from the first sentence in this paragraph, actually, it says we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems, right? Not our alcoholic problems. The same readiness to change our point of view. Now, as I read these next, the bedevilments, and I think there's seven of them, why don't we listen and consider what they sound like? Because to me, they sound like the flip side of the coin of the ninth step promises. To me, they sound like the problems that I'm having before I have that spiritual awakening as a result of doing the work. To me, they sound like the exact opposite. So, and on the ninth step promises, I don't really notice when I'm losing those promises. They're not as prevalent, right, to me. But what I do notice is these red flags that I call the bedevilments. So I do notice the opposite of them. I don't notice my losing this stuff. I notice when this stuff is cropping up. So, and I've heard that it's the opposite for other people. You know, I have some women I sponsor that they notice when they're losing the ninth step promises. They don't notice when they have these red flags that are the bedevilments. I notice the bedevilments before I notice my loss of the ninth step promises. So let me read this, because they're the exact same thing, just on the flip side of the coin. We are having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was this not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. So those bedevilments to me let me know that maybe I need to step up my game in steps 10 and 11, right? Maybe I need to spend a little bit more time in that morning meditation, in that evening review, because these are the things that I see when I rest on my laurels. Those are the red flags that start presenting themselves. I really like this next paragraph too. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas didn't work. Get this, guys. And if anybody isn't there yet, if you don't believe in God yet, if you don't have a relationship with any higher power, this helped me immensely. But the God idea did. Didn't say God worked. It said just the idea worked. The idea, right? And on the next page, it says some things like, you know, God is everything or he's nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice? What is your choice, Carrie? Like, I'm a black and white thinker. This doesn't leave me any gray area. So I can get down with this. It's like, I have a choice. Am I going to believe in this God idea or not? Right? And it's not telling me to believe in God. It's telling me to use the God idea. The God idea worked. So that got me over a couple of hills, as well. And then, you know what? I love this story so much. I don't want to be rushed through it. So I'm going to skip to Fitz Mayo or Fitz M's, story on page 56. And actually this is the author of the story in the book called Our Southern Friend. I don't think it's in the fourth edition, but that's who wrote this, Our Southern Friend. His name was Fitz M. And so this is one of those stories that we already went over Appendix 2, the spiritual experience. And when Appendix 2, the spiritual experience, talks about, now, yes, in the first printing of this book, we maybe gave the impression that in order to recover, you have to have like this immediate and spiritual overhaul, right? Followed at once by a vast change of, and, you know, and they said, but that's not our intent. And that's not necessarily so. Some of us are the educational variety. We don't have this bright light experience or this burning bush experience. Well, this story, I think, is one of the ones that appendix was talking about in the spiritual experience, because this story does kind of give the impression that that's the case, right? And it says that though frequent, they're not the only way to recover. So I just like to say that before we read this, because it's a pretty cool story. Wasn't a cool story when I was new. I'll guarantee you this. I bristled with antagonism listening to this story. So let's go ahead and start. I'm going to read every word of this one. Our friend, this is, I'm at the top of page 56. Our friend was a minister's son. He attended church school, where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration. Business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide, these calamities in his immediate family embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. One night, when confined in a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge, slight detour, the word gorge here, here's the definition for those of you who are taking notes out of the Big Book Dictionary. It's feelings of anger, disagreement, and disgust. So our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there's a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question: "Is it possible that all the religious people I've known or wrong? While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came. It crowded out all else. Who are you to say there's no God? This man recounts that he tumbled out of bed to his knees. In a few seconds, he was overwhelmed by a conviction of the presence of God. It poured over and through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide at flood. The barriers he had built through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. Infinite power and love. Another quick detour. The word infinite, and we'll go over this again, means infinity, right? Endless. He had stepped from bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his creator. Thus, our friend's cornerstone, there's that second word, the second time that they use the word cornerstone, for anybody who was here last week when we talked about the little illustration with the two red cornerstones on that illustration. And I got a lot of you guys who asked me to send it to you, and I did. And if you didn't last week, but you want to see that illustration, just shoot me a text and I'll send it. No later vicissitude has shaken it. His alcoholic problem, and this is a highlight for me, his alcoholic problem was taken away. That very night, years ago, it disappeared. This is very exciting to me now. Like the first time I read this, I bristled with antagonism worse than when I first heard the word God in this program, because I thought that this was BS. I had gone to church before, and I've heard the term also since then. If you want to hear about miracles, go to church. And if you want to witness them, come to AA. And I have witnessed miracles right in front of my eyes in this program. And so I can't argue it anymore. And the reason that I get so passionate about this part is because I've witnessed it. Like, it's miraculous. I mean, it's not miraculous that I can stay away from a drink one day at a time for the rest of my miserable life, going to lots of meetings and white knuckling it between. The miracle is that my alcoholic problem up here has been taken away. Like, that's the miracle of it, right? And that's what he's saying here, his alcoholic problem was taken away. Not he started to stay sober and put a few days together, but the problem was taken away altogether. That very night, years ago, it disappeared, and save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of a drink has never returned. Now, if that's not a promise I want to highlight in my big book, then I don't know what is. And again, it didn't sound reasonable. It didn't sound realistic to me. But once it happened to me, I read this with a whole nother, you know, perspective. And at such times, a great revulsion has risen up in him, right? So at one point in my sobriety, or even in my insanity, whereas I put my hand on the hot stove over and over and over again, and I had no defense against putting my hand on that hot stove, now I recoil as if from a hot flame. A great revulsion rises up in me when somebody offers me something to drink. It's not a temptation anymore. I recoil. And it's amazing. I mean, that's the miracle of this thing. Seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. God had restored his sanity. What is this but a miracle of healing? I'll say. Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe, right? King alcohol, John Barleycorn. It's a great persuader. He humbly offered himself to his maker. Then he knew. Even so, God had restored us all to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly. That was me. But he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. Another really cool kind of, you know, Fitz M., who was the author of Our Southern Friend in the big book. And that story, I don't know if any of you guys have read the book that AAWS publishes of all of the old stories that have been removed from the big book, that have been rotated from the big book. It's called Experience, Strength, and Hope. And that book is really good for kind of our history, right? And Fitz M., who wrote Our Southern Friend, his story was the most religious story in the book, right? It was so religious that before publishing it, they actually had to take a paragraph out because it was too over the top. Now, Jimmy B., whose story in the back of the book is, it's still in there, titled A Vicious Cycle. He is one of the most hardcore atheists in all of our history, right? And what's cool about AA that I don't know if anybody, if this happens in any other society, is Jimmy B. and Fitz M. were such close friends, even despite them being a Bible thumper and an angry atheist, right? That they were buried next to each other. And that story is such a wonderful example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of there's only one thing that matters, right? What happens when you drink? Are you alcoholic like I am? Because nothing else matters. Not our religious beliefs, not our political beliefs, not our skin color. One thing and one thing only. And that's our singleness of purpose. And that's what that friendship was based on. So I'm going to get into how it works, which is awesome, because that'll give me a little extra time next week on how it works, because this is a good chapter. It's a big chapter. So chapter 5, how it works. What I'm going to do, okay, I'm going to talk about it after I read it, but this, you know, what I was asked to do, what my task was to do for this workshop was show you how I take somebody through the book, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do exactly like what I do when I have a new person I'm working with. And I go to this page before we go to, I'm going to help them to qualify. I'm going to make sure that they have, you know, all of that stuff. But first, once we start working, because this reading is read in a lot of meetings, it's not read in mine. We start the steps at here are the steps we took, my home group, but this is read in a lot of meetings. And so the first thing I do is I go over this reading with them, because they're going to hear it over and over again, right? And you hear it enough that it starts to just become noise, right? And I want it to mean something. And so what I do is I go over it, I read it through, I have them highlight the words that I read twice. So I'm going to repeat myself on certain words. And if you're willing to try this exercise, if you want to, when I repeat myself, when I say that the same word two times, it means that's a highlighted word, right? And then what I do is I suggest that they take their book out every time they're in a meeting and somebody says, "Hey, I've asked so and so how to read how it works." I say, "Okay, you're going to take your book out too, and you're going to read along, and you're going to pay special attention. I mean, silently, not out loud, right? You're going to read along with whoever's reading how it works, and you're going to pay special attention to these words that we highlighted so that it doesn't become just noise." So that there's a meaning to it. So these are the words. Ready? I'm going to read it and then I'm going to repeat some certain words. And those are the words that I have my prospects highlight. Rarely, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly, thoroughly followed our path. And you know, that could also be said backward, that rarely have we, well, no, how does that go? Thoroughly have we seen people fail who rarely follow our path. See, I've seen it done that way too. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous, rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Now I'm going to detour right quick from the highlighting, and I'm going to read this next paragraph. Because it does have some instructions in it. I've heard this paragraph called step zero before. I won't lie. I've called this paragraph step zero before. If you don't like that, that's okay. I'm not saying that we have a step zero. I'm saying that it's kind of like step zero. So our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. So if you've decided you want what we have, and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps, right? So I'm not going to be willing to take somebody through these steps if they haven't met these two simple requirements first, right? These two, I guess you could call them step zero. Have you decided that you want what we have? And if you have, there's another one, it's twofold here. Are you willing to go to any lengths to get it? And if both of those are yeses, then you get the pass, right? Then you're ready to take certain steps. But until both of those are yes, why would you waste your time on the 12 steps? So, the instructional part of this is that first sentence. So what this doesn't say is our stories disclose in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. How many of you guys have heard people in meetings say, "Okay, I'm here to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now"? That's not what this is saying. It's asking for me to share what I was like, what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. And it's like, Carrie, it's just semantics. Come on, don't be a big book, you know, a thumper. It's like, no, there's a big difference between what it was like. Oh, the world and all of its people were at wrong. My probation officer was at me. I had this coming at me. My wife, my husband left me. This happened to me. This happened to me. That's what the world was like. That's what it was like. And for me to give the impression that then I get sober and the world is perfect and everything is great is a misrepresentation of what this program does. What this program does, it doesn't change the world and all of its people. It doesn't change exterior things for me. It changes me from the inside out. It doesn't change life from happening. It changes my reaction to life. And so, what changes here is what I was like is not the same as what it was like. So, what it was like was I was kicked out of my house. The judge did this. The, cop made me blow twice instead of blah, blah, blah. My family was leaving me. What I was like was simply, I was selfish. I was self-centered. I couldn't quit drinking. Once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And then once I was stopped, I couldn't stay stopped. And alcohol was the only solution that I had. I didn't know how else to handle things. These were I, right? Those things are what changes in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so what happened as a result of the 12 steps? I had a spiritual awakening. And all of a sudden, my whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed. Life hasn't changed. The world and all of its people are still going to be quite often wrong, right? But my reaction to life changes. My tools to life. I have a new way of living. And so I'm here to tell, when I'm asked to share my story, what I was like, what happened as a result of those 12 steps, and what I am like today as a result of you guys and this program. So picking back up, at some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless, fearless, and thorough. Thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil unless we go in, sorry, until we let go. Absolutely. Absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it's too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. Nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Complete abandon. So, those words that we highlighted, the words that I highlighted, the words I have my new sponsee highlight so that they can, really, it pops out of the page when this reading is being read in a meeting, is to really drive home that half measures avail us not half, right? In this program, half measures avail us nothing. And it's not like a fake it till you make it, just keep coming back, type thing. And maybe you can fake it till you make it and just keep coming back until you're willing to do this. But for me, my experience has been that I had to do this thoroughly, completely, demands rigorous honesty, fearless, thorough, absolutely nothing. Half measures availed us nothing. And I needed complete abandon. And so those are the words that I kind of want to emphasize during this reading. And I can't help but think that maybe that is why so many people read this at every single meeting. And I think that the intent is good. I don't know if you go to a lot of meetings, if it actually, again, you hear it so often that it kind of gets washed out a little bit. So it's a catch 22. But if I have those words highlighted, it's a little bit more difficult for me to miss them. So here are the steps we took, which were suggested as a program of recovery. Wayne S., an old timer, D, got to kayak with him over the summer. He was an old timer from my home group. He was visiting this last week. He's moved away since then. I think he lives in Arizona now, but he was just visiting on Thursday. And it just brought back so many memories because when I was newer, and I would be talking about, I don't know, taking a third step every morning, or oh yeah, I wake up and do steps 1, 2, and 3 every morning, or whatever. Anytime I mean, he was one of those old timers that definitely cared more about your life than your feelings, if you know what I mean. And he would just say in the middle of my share, in the middle of anybody's share, can't keep tooking them. That's what he'd say. It's like, what? You know? And I mean, I understand today that what I was doing, I was practicing, you know, the principles of steps 1 through 9, which I think is what this whole, you know, kind of workshop is based about too. I mean, the way the language is on the flyer and the way that it's been introduced is you take steps 1 through 9 and practice 10, 11, and 12. And so I'm just gonna ask you guys to kind of highlight some certain words in this program of recovery. And Wayne did that to me this weekend. He or on Thursday. It wasn't can't keep tooking them. It was something else. But in the middle of my share, there he goes. I'm like, God, you know, but God love him. God love him because he kept me in the book, right? But so here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I'm just gonna go down, and I'm gonna say some words that you can highlight if you want. But for me, number one, admitted. Number two, came. Number three, made. Number four, made. Number five, admitted. Number six, were. Number seven, asked. Number eight, made. Number nine, made. And all of those are in the past tense, right? And then steps 10, 11, and 12 is continued, improved, and practice. So I have continued. Highlighted because now we're going to continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And then, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of my affairs. And continuing, improving, and practicing is what I'm doing when I work steps 10, 11, and 12, right? And we're not there yet again, but on page 84, when the 10th step starts, like in paragraph 2 of page 84, 10th step, the language in this book flips. And instead of talking about this is what we did, what this is what we said, this is what we prayed, now it flips, and all of a sudden it says, now this is not an overnight matter. This should continue for a lifetime. This is and all of a sudden, for those last three steps from page 84 on to the rest of through to page 103, 10 through 12, steps 10 through 12, it all of a sudden, this is what we do, this is what we pray, this is what we say, instead of did, past tense. Many of us exclaimed once we read that, right? Oh my God, what an order. This is on page 60. I can't go through with this. I can't go through with it. Well, do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Now, notice how this says, well, notice how this doesn't say progress rather than perfection, right? Because the spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection is regarding those last three steps, right? It's regarding the maintenance and growth steps, is regarding growing along spiritual lines. But no, I have to do step one kind of perfectly. I have to have that step one experience. I can't just say, well, you know, I only had one beer last week. Progress, not perfection. No. The steps have some pretty clear-cut requirements. And then once we get into the growth, the maintenance and growth steps, once we recover, then all of a sudden it's about living life along these spiritual lines, right? And it's about growing along spiritual lines. And it's about spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And I think that it's really important for me to remember to say that word when I'm talking about progress versus perfection, because there are some things that do need to be practiced with perfection in this program. And abstinence is one of those things, at least for me. So on our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic. So what is our description of the alcoholic, right? The chapters that we already read, chapters, the doctor's opinion, more about alcoholism. And then the chapter to the agnostic, which is the one that we just read tonight, which is the one we just went over. And then our personal adventures, which are the stories in the back of the book, right? Before and after, make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. What does that sound like? Sounds a little like step one to me. Then there's B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. This is sounding a little bit like step two, right? That we needed to find a power greater than human power. And then C, that God could and would if he were sought. So it seems that we're sitting right up against step three here, right? And it is time. So we're going to go ahead and do pre-three next week. And we will also get through step three next week and hopefully step four. So we got a head start tonight. Yay! Back to you guys.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.